The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing with Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 10, The Realization of the Cosmic Self, page 368. Our first imperative aim, when we draw back from mind, life, body, and all else that is not our eternal being, is to get rid of the false idea of self by which we identify ourselves with the lower existence and can realize only our apparent being as perishable or mutable creatures in a perishable or ever-mutable world. We have to know ourselves as the self, the spirit, the eternal. We have to exist consciously in our true being. Therefore, this must be our primary, if not our first, one and all-absorbing idea and effort in the path of knowledge. But when we have realized the eternal self that we are, when we have become that inalienably, we have still a secondary aim, to establish the true relation between this eternal self that we are and the mutable existence and mutable world which till now we had falsely taken for our real being and our sole possible status. In order that there should be any real relation, it must be a relation between two realities. Formerly, we had thought the eternal self to be a remote concept far from our mundane existence, if not an illusion and an unreality, because in the nature of things, we could not conceive of ourselves as anything except this mind, life, body, changing and moving in the succession of time. When we have once got rid of our confinement to this lower status, we are apt to seize on the other side of the same erroneous relation between self and world. We tend to regard this eternity, which we increasingly are, or in which we live, as the sole reality, and begin to look down from it upon the world and man, as a remote illusion and unreality, because that is a status quite opposite to our new foundation, in which we no longer place our roots of consciousness, from which we have been lifted up and transfigured, and with which we seem to have no longer any binding link. Especially is this likely to happen if we have made the finding of the eternal self not only our primary, but our one and absorbing objective in the withdrawal from the lower triplicity. For then, we are likely to shoot at once from pure mind to pure spirit without treading the stairs between this middle and that summit, and we tend to fix on our consciousness the profound sense of a gulf which we cannot bridge and can no longer cross over again except by a painful fall. But the self and the world are in an eternal close relation, and there is a connection between them, not a gulf that has to be overleaped. Spirit and material existence are highest and lowest rung of an orderly and progressive series. Therefore, between the two, there must be a real relation and principle of connection by which the eternal Brahman is able to be at once pure spirit and self, and yet hold in himself the universe of himself. And it must be possible for the soul that is one with or in union with the eternal to adopt the same poise of divine relation in place of our present ignorant immersion in the world. This principle of connection is the eternal unity between the self and all existences. Of that eternal unity, the liberated soul must be capable, just as the ever-free and unbound divine is capable of it, and that we should realize equally with the pure self-existence at which we have first to aim. For integral self-possession, we must be one not only with the self, with God, but with all existences. We must take back in the right relation and in the poise of an eternal truth the world of our manifested existence peopled by our fellow beings from which we had drawn back because we were bound to them in a wrong relation and in the poise of a falsehood created in time by the principle of divided consciousness with all its oppositions, discords, and dualities. We have to take back all things and beings into our new consciousness, but as one with all, not divided from them by an egoistic individuality. In other words, besides the consciousness of the transcendent self, pure, self-existent, timeless, spaceless, we have to accept and become the cosmic consciousness. We have to identify our being with the infinite, who makes himself the base and continent of the worlds and dwells in all existences. This is the realization which the ancient Vedantins spoke of as seeing all existences in the self and the self in all existences. And in addition, they speak of the crowning realization of the man in whom the original miracle of existence has been repeated. Self-being has become all these existences that belong to the worlds of the becoming. From the Isha Upanishad. In these three terms is expressed fundamentally the whole of that real relation between the self and the world, which we have to substitute for the false relation created by the limiting ego. This is the new vision and sense of infinite being which we have to acquire. This, the foundation of that unity with all which we have to establish. For our real self is not the individual mental being. That is only a figure, an appearance. Our real self is cosmic, infinite. It is one with all existence and the inhabitant of all existences. The self behind our mind, life and body, is the same as the self behind the mind, life and body of all our fellow beings. And if we come to possess it, we shall naturally, when we turn to look out again upon them, tend to become one with them in the common basis of our consciousness. It is true that the mind opposes any such identification, and if we allow it to persist in its old habits and activities, it will rather strive to bring again its veil of dissonances over our new realization and possession of self than to shape and subject itself to this true and eternal vision of things. But in the first place, if we have proceeded rightly on the path of our yoga, we shall have attained to self through a purified mind and heart. And a purified mind is one that is necessarily passive and open to the knowledge. Secondly, even the mind, in spite of its tendency to limit and divide, can be taught to think in the rhythm of the unifying truth instead of the broken terms of the limiting appearance. We must therefore accustom it, by meditation and concentration, to cease to think of things and beings as separately existent in themselves, and rather to think always of the One, everywhere, and of all things as the One. Although we have spoken hitherto of the withdrawing of the motion of the jiva as the first necessity of knowledge, and as if it were to be pursued alone and by itself, yet in fact it is better for the sadhaka of the integral yoga to unite the two movements. By one he will find the self within, by the other he will find that self in all that seems to us at present to be outside us. It is possible indeed to begin with the latter movement, to realize all things in this visible and sensible existence as God, or Brahman or Virat Purusha, and then to go beyond, to all that is behind the Virat. But this has its inconveniences, and it is better, if that be found possible, to combine the two movements. This realization of all things as God or Brahman has, as we have seen, three aspects of which we can conveniently make three successive stages of experience. First, there is the self in whom all beings exist. The spirit, the divine, has manifested itself as infinite self-extended being, self-existent, pure, not subject to time and space, but supporting time and space as figures of its consciousness. It is more than all things and contains them all within that self-extended being and consciousness, not bound by anything that it creates, holds, or becomes, but free and infinite and all blissful. It holds them, in the old image, as the infinite ether contains in itself all objects. This image of the ethereal Akasha Brahman may indeed be of great practical help to the sadhaka who finds a difficulty in meditating on what seems to him at first an abstract and unseizable idea. In the image of the ether, not physical, but an encompassing ether of vast being, consciousness, and bliss, he may seek to see with the mind and to feel in his mental being this supreme existence, and to identify it in oneness with the self within him. By such meditation, the mind may be brought to a favorable state of predisposition in which, by the rending or withdrawing of the veil, the supramental vision may flood the mentality and change entirely all our seeing. And upon that change of seeing, as it becomes more and more potent and insistent and occupies all our consciousness, there will supervene, eventually, a change of becoming, so that what we see, we become. We shall be in our self-consciousness not so much cosmic as ultra-cosmic, infinite. Mind and life and body will then be only movements in that infinity which we have become. And we shall see that what exists is not world at all, but simply this infinity of spirit in which move the mighty cosmic harmonies of its own images of self-conscious becoming. But what then of all these forms and existences that make up the harmony? Shall they be to us only images, empty name and form, without any informing reality, poor, worthless things in themselves? And however grandiose, puissant, or beautiful they once seemed to our mental vision, now to be rejected and held of no value? Not so, although that would be the first natural result of a very intense absorption in the infinity of the all-containing self to the exclusion of the infinities that it contained. But these things are not empty, not mere unreal name and form imagined by a cosmic mind. They are, as we have said, in their reality, self-conscious becomings of the self. That is to say, the self dwells within all of them, even as within us, conscious of them, governing their motion, blissful in his habitation as in his embrace of all that he becomes. As the ether both contains and is, as it were, contained in the jar, so this self both contains and inhabits all existences, not in a physical, but in a spiritual sense, and is their reality. This indwelling state of the self we have to realize, we have to see, and ourselves to become, in our consciousness, the self in all existences. We have, putting aside all vain resistance of the intellect and the mental associations, to know that the divine inhabits all these becomings and is their true self and conscious spirit, and not to know it only intellectually, but to know by a self-experience that shall compel into its own diviner mold all the habits of the mental consciousness. This self that we are has finally to become to our self-consciousness entirely one with all existences, in spite of its exceeding them. We have to see it not only as that which contains and inhabits all, but that which is all, not only as indwelling spirit, but also as the name and form, the movement, and the master of the movement, the mind, and life, and body. It is by this final realization that we shall resume entirely in the right poise and the vision of the truth all that we drew back from in the first movement of recoil and withdrawal. The individual mind, life, and body, which we recoiled from as not our true being, we shall recover as a true becoming of the self, but no longer in a purely individual narrowness. We shall take up the mind not as a separate mentality imprisoned in a petty motion, but as a large movement of the universal mind, the life not as an egoistic activity of vitality and sensation and desire, but as a free movement of the universal life. The body not as a physical prison of the soul, but as a subordinate instrument and detachable robe, realizing that also as a movement of universal matter, a cell of the cosmic body. We shall come to feel all the consciousness of the physical world as one with our physical consciousness, feel all the energies of the cosmic life around as our own energies, feel all the heartbeats of the great cosmic impulse, and seeking in our heartbeats set to the rhythm of the divine Ananda, feel all the action of the universal mind flowing into our mentality, and our thought action flowing out upon it as a wave into that wide sea. This unity embracing all mind, life, and matter in the light of a supramental truth and the pulse of a spiritual bliss will be to us our internal fulfillment of the divine in a complete cosmic consciousness. But since we must embrace all this in the double term of the being and the becoming, the knowledge that we shall possess must be complete and integral. It must not stop with the realization of the pure self and spirit, but include also all those modes of the spirit by which it supports, develops, and throws itself out into its cosmic manifestation. Self-knowledge and world knowledge must be made one in the all-ensphering knowledge of the Brahman. End of chapter 10, The Realization of the Cosmic Self, page 373.